confused the partnership with Lion Corporation Southwest, which then became Lion Southwest. So look, our partnership down there, or the people involved in the partnership down there, have been doing it for 11 years. So that's a good one. I think you're absolutely right to emphasize partnerships, because when we're looking at, you know, what we think the product of AMI has been, one of the things that comes up a lot is how well partnerships work. But I'm going to question it a bit. Because there's two kinds of partnership. There's what they call the horizontal partnership between institutions in the same education sector, universities. Right? That's where you get the competition.
Yeah.
And then you've got the vertical partnerships, which is like schools that feed into colleges, colleges that feed into universities. The vertical partnerships, I think, have been enhanced by Empire. I mean, they existed before Empire, but they've been enhanced by Empire and made stronger by Empire. And if any partnership working is really going to survive and say, well, Empire did us a lot of good, I think the vertical partnerships are likely to be the one. The horizontal ones, I'm not so sure about. I wasn't involved in it, but we had the same beginnings that you had of blood on the carpets back in 2000, when you got all these rival universities, and some are more rivals than others. So, like in Southwest, Exeter is a rival for the University of Bristol because they see themselves as similar kind of institutions. UWE is a rival for Plymouth because they see themselves as having the same kind of customer base, if you want to put it in modern terms. And then you've got two Bath universities, you've got two Bristol universities. So there's lots of room for, within one education sector, competition. And, I mean, one of the universities already had a lot of widening participation going, had a large network of college partnerships and so on. And from their point of view, it was like, they didn't need the rest. Why do they need partnerships with these people who know less about widening participation than they do? Mm. They were the experts in the country. So it was hard to get going. And because the Southwest is such a big region, it comes in a lot of different types of areas. There's urban areas, there's like Dartmoor, Exmoor, there's great Swades, countries like that. But you've also got the inner city of Bristol and that kind of thing. And so it was difficult for them, the senior people, to bring all of this together and make it work. But they did. And once it got going, they all got the idea that this is a good thing. Well, the good thing is this partnership stuff works. Right. So partnerships then became a real asset, and they were all in favour of it. And because Empire has lasted such a long time, more than one term of government, that's a long time for this kind of initiative, it's been clear to all the people involved that yes, partnerships work, partnerships are good. But the trouble is, can that continue without what some other person called the Empire glue, which kind of sticks these people together? Right? If you, with Empire, you've got people who have an Empire role with responsibilities and partnerships. There's funding in that. You know, it helps if there's money in that. Without that Empire glue, is it all just going to fall apart in terms of the horizontal partnership? So I suppose that my question in that respect is is there a substitute for Empire glue? Is there because the people within the Empire partnerships know the value. But what about someone who hasn't been involved in the AMI partnership? Mm-hmm. People move on in their jobs, people retire. There's a quick turnover in higher education. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, is AMI glue essential for those partnerships, or is there a substitute?
I think there can be. If I just quickly stress that, I mean, I think you're quite right about there's more robustness in the vertical arrangements for partnerships, and that's where you see, I think, the more obvious enthusiasm. In terms of the horizontal now case, I think three out of four partners will continue to work quite closely. I think there's one that might be problematic, but they were always the one that misbehaviors in the past. I think you're right in terms of what takes the place of AMI. At the moment, I think because there is a strong focus on what the access targets are, there is something there in terms of a target that has to be met. So you've got the beginnings of, okay, this is something, you know, that we can see the point of working together. There are some logics here which are fairly strong. Probably the most simple practical thing that is driving the partners to work together at the moment around targeting and so on is that schools, colleges have gotten used to having a coordinated system of engagement for these activities. And with AIMHIGH going, they have actually already turned around and said, sometime in advance, obviously, because we've known for a while now that the funding's been withdrawn, we don't want to go back to a situation where we're getting three or four universities contacting us and us having to sort out the mess. If you can coordinate amongst yourselves how you're going to do it, then we'd like to cooperate. And that's been very useful. And again, I think that's a sign of mature partnership, that partners of that sort have actually been able to stand up, and in quite large numbers actually, and say, in various contexts, you know, you guys need to keep your act together, but this is going to work. That's been enormously helpful. And I mean, so part of the motive for me doing the presentation is a lot of the stuff that I'm talking about here. I've been rehearsing internally at my university in terms of trying to make sure that my management team keeps focused on the need for this commitment. And that's not always easy. It hasn't been easy, actually.
And coming back to my role in the in planning, part of my role in planning is to ensure that the monitoring of things is done in a way that we can actually prove that we can find money, because as you know, HEP is always looking for resources. And even more so now, because we don't have to prove, not just HEP, but as well, etc., that we're doing these things, it's going to be very key for us to work with our partners to monitor the upward progression of students and students who move across as well, because we do get that, as you know, the students who move from one to the other. And I think as time, if this new brave world that we're moving in very cheap as it goes forward, I think we will take more of that as programs become more flexible to allow the students to work with us on. You will get a lot of movement across boundaries. And so it can be very important, again, for us to maintain those relationships. They won't always be as close as you would like them to be. As Steve mentioned earlier as well, we will have fallout, to be sure. But it does say something to the maturity of those partnerships. Thanks mainly to a lot of the power that Steve and his team has put in, actually, I must say, over the years, and with people like Tony, et cetera. Those sorts of initial links, which really
worked. I sense a need to buy gin and tonic for someone later. This guy's just occurred. There was something I wanted to add, actually, which follows on from what you were saying about monitoring evaluation. One of the other things, of course, is that we were just beginning to get quite good at monitoring evaluation. I think we were rubbish at it for about the first 5 years of the partnership, to be frank. In fact, hardly any happened. What did happen was very, very weak. We started to get our act together, and also not just within our sub-region, but in the southeast region as a whole, a lot more work being done to pull together the monitoring and tracking side. And really, and I think one of the great real positives about what's happening now is that I think we're up to something like 24, 25 universities in the southern region are all buying into the continuation of the southern region tracking database. And that's great news, because that means, A, obviously, you know, we all have our own self-interest. We need to have robust data to actually show through offer or through the widening participation strategic assessment that what we do works and that we're getting students in. So, and that's more important than ever, obviously, because we're fighting a rearguard action against the government that really doesn't believe in this, frankly. So that's a really positive thing. And I think that whole area of demonstrating, you know, Zita's talked about value for money, demonstrating the efficacy of what we do has never been more important. And I think we are actually fortunate in that if this had happened, I think, 2 or 3 years ago, we wouldn't be in a strong position to do that. I think we are in quite a strong position to do that. We've got to make sure we keep our eye on the ball so that we can tell the right story. The problem being, of course, is that what I've just described is a rational account, and politics is far from rational, but anyway, that's another matter. I think there was a question over here.
I was wondering about the looking at those kind of horizontal limits and ties, what the impact of the kind of marketisation effect of the advantage is going to be. Because where you have collaboration, there's going to be a sense of wanting to compete or ending up competing. It's going to be a
the picture's quite fragmented in a way. When you get to, I'll talk about the actual situation that we're in. When you get to working with school-age children, so where in fact we start at year six in primary, so year six to year 11, the university partners are quite content to set aside any kind of competitive issues, because in a sense there's a distance, there's a gap between those kids and their university choices. Now I say that, it's a slightly more complicated picture, because in terms of the 14 to 19 consortium that I mentioned earlier in Southampton, there is a real focus on working with year 9s who are from disadvantaged backgrounds and who are at the kind of GCSE CD level. So in other words, trying to kind of raise attainment. And it's interesting, I think, you know, one of the things, again, this is a pragmatic thing, but I think it's sensible anyway, is to try and tie the aspiration raising agenda that we're promoting to the attainment raising agenda that is very, very important to schools. And in Southampton, there is a real problem with attainment, which has been improving gradually, actually, over the last few years, but still has a way to go. So we've used quite broad brush descriptions of what's happening next. It's quite complex, actually, what's happening next. I think ourselves in the University of Southampton, who don't really compete, you know, Russell Group, elite selective institution, ourselves recruiting, because we don't compete, it's a very comfortable relationship working with schools together and even with colleges. When it comes to working with year 12 up, year 12, 13, then we're all going our separate ways. Because, of course, that's recruiting. And so there's no real, but having said that, to be honest with you, the majority of the activity we undertook for Aim High was year 11 or below anyway. So in that sense, not a lot of progress. It'll be interesting to see how this develops. Obviously, it is an incredibly volatile situation in many respects. But I think at the moment, there's enough in it in terms of what do we gain from working together as opposed to not working together. For the glue to still be there, and the glue, the best glue is big sums of money, the like of which you got from AMI, unfortunately that ain't there. But at the moment, where there are targets and objectives that need to be met, and where you can see that there's a clear case that partnership would deliver that better, then you can make that case. The problem is, and I think you refer to it, Jim, you only need a DVC to come in from the outside. Doesn't have that philosophy in one university, and that adds a whole new area of instability. So it's always going to be a balancing act.
I mean, at the local level, it's very key for us because we get a third of our students considered one of our pigeon students, whereas Southampton University, of course, it's a different picture. So it's key for us to maintain those links. To ensure that we promote and keep the partnerships going. But I'm sure that as we move forward, it will be the moments of peer growing, growing organized and so on.
It's going to get that demographic big, aren't it?
Yes.
Well. Yes.
Yes.
So, scarce resource is going to be even more.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what Zetas has described, because that a significant chunk of our market is WP, then we are clearly going to concentrate on WP soon, so we will continue to put resources in. But yes, as you say, the demographic bit adds another factor into it, and certainly we're looking at diversifying in terms of recruitment there. But of course, it's an interesting one. We looked at matures, well, there are challenges with that as well, which we've already looked at today, so it's, I don't want to paint a rosy picture, but I think there is a need in times of crisis for one to pick out the positive and at least say, okay, what can we do with this?
Yes, it seems right, because that is very key, because my role is to do things like the HESA returns is meeting expectations and all those sorts of things, and the announcement that the funding will be there. As much student application will be there for students with A, B, and STEM subjects in particular, and limited numbers and a cap on anybody else, i.e. students who don't have A, B, and would be in STEM subjects, is a great worry as we go forward. So to ensure that we get the balance right.
You just mentioned the regional tracking database. I was quite interested in that. Tell me how that's administered and what information you've got.
Okay, sure. It's developed by, in fact, there used to be a regional structure for AIM Higher below the national. So there's a national, regional, and then sub-regional. And the regional structure got abolished. And the region, but one of the things about the regional structure, so when I say that it was like, so there was a southeast regional office for AIM Higher, which I think is based in Guildford, actually. And they had started to kind of address these issues of monitoring and tracking. When the regional structure was done away with, again, fortunately, there was enough connectivity between the different sub-regional partnerships to say, okay, we'll continue working with this. So there's been continued work over a few years on that. In the last couple of years, where the need to show value for money and so on has been there, then we've kind of developed that. And in terms of the data that we're using, and what we're trying to do there, and the data that we've so far got, is to show students who have had AIM Higher engagements and track how many of those proceed to HE as against the group who have, you know, a similar social group who haven't had those engagements. So in other words, it's very crude because it isn't quite as neat as a control group and a subject group. But what we are trying to do there is show, okay, you know, where there has been intervention, what progression do you get as against a similar group where there hasn't been intervention. And that's shown quite useful stuff. It's at this moment in time, I have to say, it's still very crude and rough-edged. And we think we've still got a way to go, but we think there's the beginnings of something very useful there. And I think one of the things we were going to show you in the video, funny enough, was a comment from the director of Action Isle of Wight, saying, the next step has got to be, in a sense, a bit more ruthless about how we go about this, and actually do set up control groups and variable groups, and actually say, okay, these groups get intervention, these don't. And there's something a bit Landrattish about that, which I think we will find a little bit offensive. But actually, in terms of what we're being asked to do, we've really got to demonstrate, do these interventions make a difference? And at the moment, the data is still, as I say, limited, and of course, partly a lot of the kids we've worked with since we started the tracking project haven't proceeded to HE yet. We started 8 years ago, it would be fabulous, but that was the trick that everyone missed, unfortunately. What we're looking to do now is take the data that we've got to be able to demonstrate more and more clearly that interventions through AIM Higher and so on have an effect on decision. That's going to be hard as well given the new circumstances that we face, but even more important for that reason.
So is it just information about whether they attended
HE
or is it about where they've gone
and
how they've done
more? Yes, where they've gone.
National things happening because of the things that are happening nationally through bids and so on. People like UCAS will be collecting great amounts of data, and then institutions will have to also collect better data. Those then people, so that when institutions submit their student data, which you have to do annually, either through HESA or the INR, their institution, we will then be able to track them through all the way from the specific school that they've come to, what grades they've come in with, and where they're going on to, and so on, all the way through. There's a measure of action, which has a unique student identifier, and that's going to be rolled backwards to schools and so on. So it should be, in theory, easier to report.
Just to answer your question, sorry, I should have said that, we are able to track which institutions they go to.
Yeah.
And that should be very important because, again, in terms of demonstrating commitment to partnership working for this agenda, it's very, very handy that the institutions in the partnership in the top four, we can show how many people have progressed in the first year that we've been able to track. So, that's very useful. Again, that's something we want to develop further.
Do you find that there's a strong correlation between where students engaged in outreach activities, like which universities, that's going to go to, or was it?
We haven't tunneled down to that, but that would be a very interesting question to
ask. We do know that students have come to us as a result of the links.
So is that something that the university comes up rather than the
At the moment, it's at the university.
The specs for the new database are being sort of discussed at the moment. But yes, in terms of the data that we get about our own interventions, we're satisfied that they're very effective. But again, I think the whole game needs to be upped in terms of what we have to say about it.
So do you find the information out just by sending out questionnaires to students from there?
Well, in terms of tracking, that's whether or not they enroll, but in terms of, that's been the problem really, using pre-event and post-event feedback is a great way of establishing whether or not they enjoyed it and got a lot out of it and maybe whether it made them think of it differently, but it doesn't measure whether they actually end up going to HE. And that's the real $64,000 question.
Do you think that the enrollment data, that's a real need for partnership, because if you're talking about one in class situation in terms of progressing to HE generally, being able to share that data so you can say that it's still successful because they went on to university even if it's not your university.
Yes,
so is that kind of sharing of enrollment data going to be?
That I think will probably end up being part of what the regional database does, yeah. But obviously there's a little bit of discussion needed to be had on that. And of course the more partners that get involved, the cheaper it becomes, but also the more complex.
Adding to that, the tracking issue about whether students have gone through NMI or any other one expression initiative end up in graduate level employment. And that's the bigger test.
Yeah.
Because the route to higher education can take many years or something because they've got that distance of travel to be ready and be prepared to take on that challenge.
Yeah.
I know we're on a grassroots level, and we're negotiating with our colleagues student aid course about how we can access PCAS data, but also asking students who come onto the program, I manage professional mentoring scheme, for their consent to track them when they exit through their mobile telephone numbers, which are far more reliable than the other database.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds great. You're absolutely right. I mean, that's really key in terms of addressing people's. Well, it's back to that poorly question, isn't it? About is it worth me going to university? I've got to be able. I mean, A, the government are going to force us to show it more clearly, but B, I think in terms of those groups, if we're not going to let them down, we need to have a clear understanding of that. Yeah. Okay, we're pretty much there. Unless anyone's got a
Steve Kendall from the Merck back here. There seems to me, you're talking about what will survive a vampire locally, and I can think about what will survive a vampire where I work. So, seems to me that there is a kind of an assumption in this conference, an assumption in meetings of colleagues around vampire when they come together, that there is a community with a set of shared beliefs and values or being contented on particulars. That there is an us, and you've often said in the things you've been saying in the last hour, sort of we, as if somehow we all know who we are, and we probably do. How is that us, that community, that set of shared beliefs and values, going to sustain itself? And this is a big question, but I mean, or is it going to sustain itself? And within what structures might it do so? I'm not necessarily looking for one individual to just deliver the kind of the answer to that. But it seems to me to be very important to be asking that whilst we're still together.
Yes.
In a sense.
Yes.
So I'd just be interested in because what you're describing, it seems to me, is taking something on into a new context, and that's going to happen. That's going to be replicated in various ways.
Yeah.
The length and breadth of the country.
Yeah.
Well, keep us together.
I think that's a fantastic question. I mean, I think the keeping us together bit, we were talking about this yesterday because, of course, Action and Access goes in December. And you know, my immediate question was, Christ, what are we going to do with the huge archive of best practice that Action Access represents? And I mean, I haven't had a chance to talk to John Storer about it, but you know, it strikes me that actually this is actually a time where FACE needs to step up potentially, because I think networking together as a community of professionals with these concerns, we've had it easy, really, haven't we? And in a sense, it's all been done for us to a large extent. I think we've reached the point now where if we are going to keep this discourse alive and these connections and these forms of support and learning about best practice and so on, then we really need to network effectively. And we've got a network in FACE, which I think is underutilised and hasn't been focused in that way. And I think it's got to be, we've got to give it a go, I think, and try and use FACE in that way. I was talking to someone, I can't remember where they were from, not this conference, it was something else a couple of months ago. And I just made mention of what we were doing with the 14 to 19 consortium. And they said, well, we never even thought of speakers now. You know, and it's those little things, isn't it? And I mean, likewise, I've had similar things where people have said to me, well, why didn't you try that? And I think, bloody hell, it's so obvious. Why didn't I do? You know, and like you say, the point is, if you don't have those points of contact, and we won't, those points of contact, as you say, are dwindling, then there's a real problem. So I think there's, you know, FACE, I think, you know, I would say, obviously, because I'm involved with FACE and we're here, I think, you know, there has to be a vehicle for doing that, and we've really got to try and make that work. But that's going to be quite difficult, because it's not as extensive a network as it should be, or it could be. But I think that's the challenge for the next, well, it's quick, actually, the next few months, not the next 12 months. But I think that's a tremendous question. Because as you say, it's one of those things I don't know about, and others that think it's a very definite sense of closure coming, but you know, it having been around for so long, Empire has become part of the fabric. It's going to be very strange when it's not there. But also, there are lots of things it gave us, which we took for granted, and didn't. And when they're gone, we'll suddenly go, bloody hell! You know,
people are so concerned with this word legacy. Empire that I leave behind. Because I mean, there's so many lessons, like the importance of progressive interventions rather than random interventions.
Yeah.
All those things have been learned. And they'll just disappear into the ether unless someone grabs a hold of them and puts them somewhere where they can be kept.
Yeah, I agree.
But a lot of those tied to individual expertise.
Yes.
As soon as those individuals go, you know, I don't think you can download that into a legacy box.
No,
you can have things like headphones and profiles and so on, which people can come back to in the market.
Which is unfortunate. Yes. Yeah, I mean, I've also, don't even think of becoming a consultant, I would say, because it seems to be that there are going to be hundreds of new consultants on the block. It's everyone I know working in Empire is going that way. But you know, seriously, I do think putting together some form of network quickly and really making the most of that is urgent. I think it's something we need to maybe try and flag during the course of this conference, actually.
I think this is an excellent question. This is one of the questions at the last exec meeting address, because we realised that over the last 8 years, FACE have become very AMIRE focused. And we didn't, of course, have FACE before AMIRE, and we want to have FACE after AMIRE. So we just need to refocus, and I think, the questions that you want, we just need to take it forward and put it. And I'm going to chair this.
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
Because I think the other thing about, I mean, I think that's a very interesting point. I think there is that thing about what I was saying before, about not just looking to try and preserve what went on before, but actually looking to see, you know, do we need to widen our remit a little bit? Do we need to engage with what? So, I mean, for example, I've just invited someone here involved in community development onto the executive, because I think actually we need to get a much broader range. We've been very mainstream, widening participation, stroke aim higher focus in FACE for a number of years. It didn't used to be that way, as you were well there, because you were there. And I think there's that question of what I was posing there in terms of what we're doing in Southampton is, okay, who else has a similar mission that we need to link up with? And I think that's a really key thing.
On that note, I think we need to...
Thank you very much. Yes, thank you for your attention.